Welcome to the Development Download with Leaps and Bounds. Hey everyone, welcome to our very first podcast. It's the Developmental Download. We are slightly nervous and super excited to be trying out this podcast thing. So bear with us as we kind of figure out our learning journey a little bit. Just a little bit about who we are. My name is Lisa Kuzman, and I'm the owner and occupational therapist with Leaps and Bounds. And Leaps and Bounds is a pediatric therapy center that we started and just celebrated their 20 years in business this year.
And I'm Erin Wilhite, and I have been an occupational therapist here at Leaps and Bounds for 16 years. And one of my favorite parts of this job is helping kids build skills through play while supporting families as they navigate through development.
All right. Our goal with this podcast is to just be a resource for families as well as other professionals on all things related to child development. We're hoping to have some episodes devoted to things like sensory processing, behavior, emotional regulation, sleep, and so much more.
So much more. We are joined today with two of our colleagues and, of course, amazing therapists. We have Julie Johnson, an occupational therapist, and Sarah Metz, a speech therapist, to discuss play and development. Thank you both for taking time to share all of these great, this great info with us.
Yeah, you're welcome. We're very excited to be here.
All right, you guys. So the job of a child is to play and learn. And so as therapists, we're always working on play skills with our clients. These play skills may look different for different kids, and they may, and some kids may even have difficulty working through these play skills and finding ways to play and learn. We often have questions from parents, and it's just a hot topic for some of our families. We thought it would be helpful to work through some of these questions today with Julie and Sarah.
Yeah, we're excited.
Yeah, sounds good. Can't wait to get in. Hey. First question, how do you know if a child is experiencing a delay in development with speech or motor skills?
Yeah, Julie, do you want to start?
Sure. So I'm Julie Johnson. I'm an OT. And with motor skills, it's pretty obvious. Parents notice when their child is delayed with crawling, delayed with walking, can't balance, falling over. Those things are pretty easy. But social emotional development is a little bit harder to notice difficulty with because tantrums are a normal part of development. And especially for a new parent, that's hard to kind of grasp and understand. So I think just keeping an eye out for your child making progress in these areas and they're not getting worse and worse and worse, or if you're trying strategies.
Julie, you mentioned the tantrums, and I'm sure that's something that every parent is dealing with. How do you know if it's just a typical child tantrum versus something that might be a little bit more?
Yeah, so I look at how quickly they can recover. If it's a young child, can you pretty easily redirect them? And we'll talk about this more later, but through play, right? If you get silly with them, if you play with them through that big emotion and they can work through it within 5, 10, 15 minutes, you know, I think that's pretty typical for a young, we're talking mostly about toddlers today. But if it's lasting a long time, if it seems like they have that meltdown all day long, then that's a concern we want to chat with that family about.
Awesome. Yeah, and to kind of piggyback off of that, if a child is struggling with their speech and language development, it can also present with difficulties in emotional regulation too, because if they can't say what they need or what they want and get those wants and needs met by their parent, then the caregiver and the child can become frustrated.
Oh, definitely. We see that all the time here.
For sure. All right. So when families come in for therapy, a lot of times we are engaging in play. So how can you talk about, how can you explain to parents how play might be therapeutic?
Yeah, I'll take this one, Sarah. So play gives us that motivation to learn and move through those developmental stages. So if your child is learning to roll and you're just gonna help them roll, 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 they're gonna get pretty frustrated on the floor. If you're pulling toys into it and they're rolling for a purpose, they're playing and you're being silly and you're making funny noises and engaging with that child, then they're gonna be more motivated to get through those milestones. So it's giving them that opportunity to practice. These young toddlers love repetition. You know, they want to play the same game over and over and over again 100 times, which is frustrating for us as parents. But for the child, that repetition is how they master that motor skill or that speech skill. I'm sure you would agree. And so we just need play as a tool to meet those milestones.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, I have another one for you. What are the different stages or levels of play?
Yeah,
there are typically five stages of play that a child would go through as they get older.
The first stage is like solitary play, where the child's mainly playing
just by themselves. And that'll go from about zero to 2 years old.
And this will kind of be what they're like
looking at the toy that they're holding, or they might be banging on an object just to hear some noise. Then they start
moving through onlooker play,
and this can be really quick. This might even be something that you see with one type of toy and not with another toy. And this is where they might want to watch other children play, or even you play with the toy, like watching you build with blocks, but not really engaging it with you.
And then they'll want to like parallel play.
And this one's kind of easy to spot because you'll see kids sitting next to each other, maybe even playing with the same toy, like type of toy, but not together. They're just maybe building two separate towers of blocks next to each other. This will go for about 3 years old. And then at 3 years old, associative play kind of comes in. And this is where two kids might be building with the same blocks and might even be building a tower together. But they're not like competing for those blocks. They're not really like talking about how they're going to build together. They're kind of just like, they know how to build a tower. They know how to play with the toy that they have, but they're not really like talking with one another on what they're going to do. And then later on, usually around like 4 years old, they're going to move into cooperative play. And this is where kids will take turns. They're going to ask questions. They're going to be more creative with their play together. They might be saying with the blocks, like, hey, can we make it taller? Or, oh, watch out, it's going to fall. They're like having these back and forth turns, whether it's talking or building.
Okay, so I have a random question.
Yeah.
Sarah, which type of play is your favorite?
Ooh.
Gotcha.
I really like parallel play. I think that it's really fun to watch kids start to develop these play skills. And that's like the earliest stage where you're really going to see this play start to develop, where kids are maybe even going to do some pretend play, even if it's not with other kids. Like, you're going to start seeing these types of skills start to develop.
That's awesome. Thank you.
Yeah. What do you guys think? So sometimes what happens is kids will get stuck in their own pattern of play, right? So how do you help them move past that pattern?
Yeah, I can kind of take this one, Julie.
Sure.
So sometimes our kids might need help moving through stages of play, like especially from solitary onward. Like, they might be stuck in this, oh, I'm just going to look at the toy, or I'm going to play by myself, or I'm going to watch you. So some toys that might help kids move past the solitary play would be like picture books and chunky puzzles. You're going to set up the environment to help your kid problem solve with some new toys, and not just like sit and hold a toy or like watch from afar. And then moving through onlooker, your kid might be really hesitant to join in some new play or even sit next to another child. So setting up some play dates is really helpful. Giving your child like as many opportunities as possible to observe other peers is really important to move into parallel play. And then from parallel onto associative, and then later stage, just encourage your child to join in activities with other peers. Like continue those play dates, more community-based outings, encourage more sensory play activities, things that really get your child like wanting to play with other kids and be excited about the play.
Yeah. Julie, I'm wondering about how you might describe how regulation can play into how kids are playing with one another, mm-hmm. and how they can engage in those social situations when they're having trouble being regulated.
So, Yeah, you're saying they're toddlers. They don't have their own regulation skills mm-hmm. right now. So they go to try to work collaboratively on the tower. It mm-hmm. falls over. Right. They lose it. Mm-hmm. Yeah. How do we work through that? I mean, I think that experience is necessary to develop these social skills mm-hmm. and these regulation skills. If they don't have that opportunity, if they're a child that's stuck in solitary or onlooker mm-hmm. play, they don't have the opportunity, then they're never going to develop those mm-hmm. skills until they get that chance to work through it. So I mean, I think it's just a normal part of the process. And as the parent, mm-hmm. we can model, we'll talk about this more later probably too, but we can model for them how we stay calm, and we can take them through yeah. examples of at home, I knock over my tower and that child looks to me for how I react and how I stay regulated and what I do next.
Yeah.
So I think that's part of
I would agree. I think it definitely starts at home. It starts with adults probably modeling that regulation behavior that mm-hmm. they're looking for before introducing it with other kids.
Yeah. Do you guys want to keep talking about modeling? Like, what else can parents do to promote that development at this point?
Yeah, I think for young kids, you think about a baby, okay? Those first, especially the motor development things are reflexive. It's automatic. You don't have to get down on the floor and roll around for your baby to learn how to roll. They're just going to learn how to roll, assuming there's nothing else going on. But for these later skills, they have to actually watch you do these things. If a child never sees somebody stirring a bowl with a spoon, they're never going to spontaneously one day pick up a bowl and a spoon and start stirring mm-hmm. in their pretend play. And so we need lots of experiences. Let them see what we're doing. We play. We take them through lots of different role-playing opportunities, basically. The other thing, let's go to neuroscience real quick. take it up a notch. Mirror neurons are a thing. So a mirror neuron is in our brain, and when we watch someone do an action, that mirror neuron fires just like it would if we were doing the action ourselves. So in a very little baby, you can stick out your tongue and they'll actually stick their tongue out too. I mean, a little baby, isn't that incredible? Mm-hmm. And so when we're wanting a child to learn how to do something, we have to do it with them, alongside them, lots and lots and lots of times to get those mirror neurons firing, even before they try doing it themselves. And then they start doing it, then we're doing it together, and then we're moving through those stages of play with that activity. So I think modeling is just necessary, especially for the motor piece. Yeah. And you can talk to the speech piece.
I was going to say, sure there's a whole speech to that too.
Oh yeah, like we model all the time in speech language therapy. That's how we learn new words is by modeling and by hearing it. And something that kind of partners with modeling is narration, talking about what you're doing throughout your day. A parent can be the best model by doing this. It could be something so mundane, like when you're in the kitchen cooking, you just start modeling what you're doing for your kid and narrating the situation that you're in. Oh, let's make some dinner. First, I have to get out the bowl and then the knife. Chicken's in the fridge. Oh, it's really cold in there. Just start talking about those things. Just that really simple vocabulary. And your child hears it. And their mirror neurons start firing. And they're watching you. And they're listening. And they're soaking in all of this great language.
I know, even from an OT standpoint, and you guys can also jump in, but yeah, that just taking that intrinsic thought and making it an external kind of conversation. Yeah. And that can even from an OT standpoint help with problem solving, right? Yes. Like, oh no, the block tower did fall. I can take a big deep breath and let's try again. Mm-hmm. Versus a lot of times as parents, we often just like fix the problem and the kid doesn't even know it was a problem.
Yeah.
So yeah, I think even carrying that out from the OT standpoint too.
That's a great point. Yeah, that we'll have to do an executive functioning podcast at some point. But that's like laying that groundwork for those executive functioning planning skills and regulation. Yeah, working through the problem. Great point, Erin.
One of the questions that we get a lot from parents are when a child is becomes the person that the whole family is following, when the child is controlling the family and demonstrating a lot of defiance, and so the family often can be walking on eggshells with that child, or just trying to manage their day so there's not a massive meltdown. Can you talk about some strategies and things parents might do to help with those kids that where you struggle with flexibility and stepping outside of routines?
Yeah. So first I want to say that in toddlers, this is normal, right? I mean, they're learning. Now I am my own person. I'm not a part of my mom and dad. I can do this. I can change how other people react. I have control now. And it's normal to seek that control. As parents, we pick what our kids eat and what they wear. And well, at least in these early years, what our schedule is going to be. And they don't have any control throughout the day. And so it is normal for a child to seek some control, but we do have to be careful as parents to not let them take over, because we want to keep boundaries so that the child knows they are the child and we are the parent. And it's actually more comfortable and it's easier to regulate when you feel like your parent is parenting and has boundaries for you and doesn't just give you control of your life. That can be very hard because they're not ready for that yet, to have total control. Yeah. So with the control, one of the, I mean, the things that Sarah and I talk about all the time are giving choices. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you want to talk about that in terms of how many choices are appropriate for this age.
Yeah. I mean, I would try to limit choices to 2 to 3 options. But the thing that I see parents do that I like, kind of cringe at, is they're giving choices that aren't something that they want, right? Like the parent might say, do you want to take a bath? And but the answer is going to be yes. Like it has to be yes. You have to take a bath. So we're giving kids these choices to say no. And then parents are like upset that their kid's saying no. So trying to change how we're wording those questions and not just be a yes or no, if the answer cannot be no. Instead you might say around bath time, like, do you want to bring your ducky or a froggy into the bath? And so the child knows, like, I'm going to be taking a bath, but I have some power to make this decision. Do I want to bring this toy or this toy with me? I think that that's really powerful and that can really help with regulation.
Yeah, I think that's great because it also takes the focus off of the non-preferred thing, which in this case is the bath, and it's just about the preferred toy, you know, so.
Yeah, exactly.
The bath's just secondary.
Yeah.
You're getting in there. The other thing that we often use at Leaps and Bounds, we do visual schedules all the time. And I think that has to match the developmental level of the child. So it could be for an older child, you know, we might just have a list of things that we need to do during the day. For a younger child, we could have pictures. We can make a story about what the schedule is going to look like during that non-preferred task or whatever that hard time of the day is.
Yeah. Yeah. Or even first then or first when, you know, statements too. Like first we're going to do this, then we're going to do that. That sets up your child to know what's going to happen next, even if they're not planning their day out for themselves. Yeah.
I always, with my kids, used when, then. When you brush your teeth, then we can read your book. And, you know, we're going to get it done and I will sit here patiently as long as I need to, but I'm holding this boundary for you. The other thing I was just thinking was visual timers.
Oh, yeah.
You know, kids have no concept of time at this age. And so, I don't know, trying to think of other brands. The only brand that's coming to my head right now is Time Timer, but we have a lot of those in the clinic where the child can actually see the color moving on the timer, on the clock, so that they know how much time is left. And that way they have a little bit more predictability in their day.
Yeah, those are all great ideas and tips. Those are great tips to limit those tantrums, but we all know they happen, right? Sure. It's probably one of the biggest struggles that parents of toddlers are working through. So do you have any tips to help those parents they can't really get out of that kind of phase for these kids?
Well, parenting's tough. It's definitely tough. And these toddler tantrums can be intense and embarrassing if you're in public. And it's hard to keep our cool during these sometimes. But know that these young children, it is normal for them to have tantrums. And what they really need is co-regulation. So that means that the child is regulating alongside the parent. And we are modeling for them how to stay calm and work through this situation. So if we lose it, they're just going to escalate. If I were to yell at my child when she's having a tantrum, she is just going to scream louder and it's going to get worse and it's going to take much longer to work through it. Mm-hmm. If I can just stay calm, take a breath, sit down maybe at her level, maybe on the other side of the room, give her a little space. I'm just thinking of my own toddler right now. That's why I say she. then it's, she's going to calm down a lot quicker. It's not like the tantrum's going to go away, but that's the first piece, is just taking a breath, mm-hmm. controlling yourself, and letting them see that you are calm and that their big emotions aren't affecting you in that moment.
Yeah.
So then the thing I use the most at Leaps and Bounds to counter tantrums is play and silly behavior, because it's the one thing I feel like that really breaks through and interrupts the momentum of that tantrum. Mm-hmm. So I don't know, let's say the child is at dinner and I pull out the plate of food and they are not wanting to eat whatever I served. So I might switch it up and pull the plate. Like, I see she's not going to eat. She's starting to throw a tantrum, and I pull the plate back and I go, no, don't eat my food. And I pretend it's my plate and I'm eating, and maybe I'm her favorite character. I'm doing an Elmo voice, which I can't actually do. I wish I could. But, you know, just turning away and being silly and eating my broccoli or my tree or whatever it is, making it something else and turning it into play and silly and taking the pressure off of the child. And then all of a sudden they forget that they were having a tantrum. And now it's just silly. And, oh, actually, that looks like fun what mom is doing. I kind of want to jump in and do that. So, yes, I think getting silly with them can be good. Sometimes I'll say something weird off the wall, like, not like, of course, in the moment I can't think of anything. But let's say the kid's having a tantrum and I might just start crawling around on the floor and barking like a dog. Whatever. And the child just stops. It interrupts them and they're, what is my mom doing? This is so strange, right? And then I sniff around and then they're quieting down because they're listening to me and they're looking at me and, mm-hmm. and they want to know what I'm playing. And I say something like, I smell a treat. Where's the treat? And I'm looking around and now all of a sudden they are joining me trying to find this treat, and I find something and now we're pretend playing and they forgot about the other thing. Now, not that I just want to distract them from whatever big emotions they were having, but once they're calm, we can talk about it later. We can process through it in the mm-hmm. moment. They're dysregulated and they're not able to talk through those emotions. Mm-hmm. So sorry, that was a long answer.
For next time, you could say, hey, I know this situation was hard. What are we going to do to be able to get through it? Yes. So you can kind of have, but you can't process in the moment of it.
No, not at all.
And I'm sure you can't use the words too. I'm sure in your part, when they are dysregulated, that speech probably doesn't come out as easy for them.
No, it's going to be screaming, crying. They might even be stuck on no, and not really have the capability to say anything else besides that in the moment. So once a child is regulated again, kind of diving in or even modeling, narrating, like, I was really mad, I needed this to help me, using those I statements to help a child understand what they were feeling and making a plan for next time.
You know, another question we get a lot from parents is about negative behaviors, right? Like, maybe it's not that they're having a tantrum, but they're hitting their brother or something, or they're biting their brother. So I think play comes into that as well. Like, they're hitting their brother with a toy and you take that toy because you're holding that boundary. You're not going to let them hit their brother. And you use it like a magic wand and you say, freeze. And then you turn it into this game and you're showing them how they can appropriately use it. And then you pass it back to them and they get a chance to appropriately use it as a freeze wand or a magic wand or, you know, whatever you want to pretend with. And now they have more repetitions doing something appropriate with that toy than hitting that one time. Mm-hmm. And so we're just showing them, yeah, how to get that positive behavior.
What would you like parents to know if they want to know more about all of these techniques? What are some things you could share with them?
Well, I think it's important to, you know, your kid the best, better than anyone else. You see your pediatrician very little, you know, not everybody has, you know, resources. So if you have any suspicion that your child maybe is delayed with development or these meltdowns, you just can't handle them, there are resources out there. Contact us or someone else who knows about play and knows what to look out for a consult or an evaluation or something.
Yeah, exactly. Like, trust your gut. If you feel like something's off or that your child isn't hitting these milestones, just reach out. You know, at Leaps and Bounds, we do
some screenings and we do free consults and things like that. But there are other resources out there too that would help you to determine if your child was delayed.
And then if parents are actually interested in like learning some of these skills, so play doesn't come naturally to everyone. Like not everybody can just off the top of their head come up with that puppy dog. Yeah. Brilliant. example that I came up with. So silly. So if play doesn't come naturally to you, then you may want some more guidance. And Sarah and I have been working on creating this group that I think mm-hmm. could be really helpful to families. It's going to take, so it'll be a parent or a caregiver and the child, the young toddler, and take them through how to do some of these things we just talked about today.
Yeah.
How to promote speech, mm-hmm. how to promote motor skills and regulation within play, using toys that you have at home already, so that we can just build your confidence a little bit.
Yeah, exactly. The group's called Let's Learn to Play. And it's really just gonna focus on like increasing language, working on some motor skills, mm-hmm. And then navigating those tantrums too, and just building a positive relationship with your little one.
Yeah, so the model would be you come into the group, we could do a little bit of play warm-up, then there'll be a teaching component from either the OT or the speech therapist for the parents. Mm-hmm. Then we'll practice the skill, so you're actually playing with your child, whatever we just worked through, mm-hmm. and practicing that, so when you get home, you have more confidence to work through that yeah. situation.
I think that's huge for parents, because mm-hmm. I know that quite a few parents that I see are often, well, am I doing this right? So I think yeah. that would even, like you guys were mentioning, just the confidence for a parent to know what they're looking for and what they need to be targeting. So I think that's fantastic.
Yeah, it's yeah. one thing to come in and observe the therapy session or observe through the window, but to actually be a part of it and have to try the skill with your child.
Yeah.
I think that really solidifies the skill.
Yeah.
Awesome. You guys, thank you so much for yeah. all of this info. And we did it. Our first podcast.
Woo-hoo!
Boom.
Yeah. All right. Fun.
We thank you. And we look forward to doing more podcasts in the future.
Awesome. Sounds good. If anyone's Bye. Interested in that group, just reach out to our office.
You've been listening to The Development Download with Leaps and Bounds.